Estate planning and long-term care planning are essential to protect yourself and your assets. What happens if you're unable to handle your own affairs? Are you prepared? Well, join me as I talk with Evan Farr. He's a certified elder law and estate planning attorney, and we're going to tell you the things that you need to know. It protects yourself, your own health. It can also protect your assets. Evan, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you for having me, Shirley.
Now, this very interesting subject here, and it's one that most of us really do not want to have to think about. I mean, truthfully, who likes to think about having to plan? But if we don't plan, we're going to be really sorry. Is there one document that everybody should have?
There is, Shirley. The single most important document for both estate planning and long-term care planning is a general power of attorney. This is a document that allows somebody else to act for you in a legal and financial capacity if you become incapacitated due to a physical or a cognitive disability, and avoids having to go to court to obtain a guardianship and conservatorship.
All right. Now, this power of attorney, is it something that you sign a document and you name somebody to handle your affairs if you're unable to do them, or is it something that tell me how it works.
That's exactly correct. It's a document prepared by an attorney that you sign, and it names someone, typically a family member of yours. It may be your spouse. It may be an adult child, some trusted person who is put in place, typically in a standby nature, that they can take over and manage your legal and financial affairs in the future if you become unable to act for yourself. You don't give up your own power to act by signing a power of attorney. That's a common misconception. You still retain the power to act. It's just that if you're unable to, then someone else can come in and act for you.
All right. Now, suppose I sign this document and, you know, I don't have, thank goodness, but suppose that someone has a family member who's been named, and unbeknownst to the person who signed the power of attorney, can that person use that document to get money and do stuff without your knowledge? Or is it something that you have? How can it be activated, I guess, is the question that I'm asking. What kind of control do you have over it, for example?
Well,
because people do strange things when they get access to money.
Sometimes they do, and that's why it's important to have a trusted person. These are very powerful documents. To be activated, first of all, it depends on the type of power of attorney. You can sign either an immediate power of attorney, which gives somebody right away the power to act for you, or you can sign what's called a springing power of attorney, which only springs into effect if you become disabled. And typically there's a certification process involved where two doctors have to certify. And yes, a power of attorney, particularly if it's an immediate power of attorney, it can be abused by a dishonest agent who is acting under the power of attorney. However, there are laws against your agent abusing the power.
Well, there may be laws against it, but if someone does it and depletes the estate of the person, then, I mean, it's too late. They can go to jail, but the other heirs would lose out. So in some ways, it sounds to me like you probably are safer, unless you're absolutely 101% certain about the individual, that you do this, what you call springing power of attorney, which is something that would go into effect when, in fact, you are disabled, unable to handle your own affairs.
That is what most people do. They have the springing provision in there. However, you know, if you're truly concerned with the person you name abusing their power, there's just as much chance that they're going to abuse it after you become incompetent. In fact, there's probably more chance at that point.
That's true, because you're not there to oversee it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I hear about scams all the time.
Sure.
I've got to talk about them. Well, anyway, okay, so you need to have this power of attorney, and you have two choices of how you can do it. Beyond that, where do you see the essential step that we take in estate planning?
Well, another very important document is an advance medical directive. This is a document that gives your loved ones and your physicians the information that they need to know what your wishes are if you have a terminal condition or if you simply have a condition where you're unable to speak for yourself. It may not be terminal, but maybe you're in a coma or you're paralyzed or unconscious. So that's a very important document.
This has to do with if you're unable to make your own medical decisions as to whether or not, for example, you would want to be resuscitated if or heroic means taken to preserve your life. And those are the distinctions. Those are the kinds of things you make choices about in
exactly.
that document.
That's a big part of the Advanced Medical Directive. Those types of end-of-life decisions are supposed to only come into play if you are terminal. If you are not terminal but you simply can't communicate, then what the Advanced Medical Directive does is it names an agent to make decisions for you, just to communicate your what would have been your wishes to the doctor.
And the document itself will name that agent.
That's correct.
Okay, because I know that there are people who have unfortunately not had family members and they've had to have the state come in and take over. So it's really desirable, even if it's a trusted friend, if you don't have a close relative, if it's a trusted friend who's willing to assume that responsibility would be of value, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we've gotten the medical power. That's a medical power of attorney. Is that what you would call
That's another name for it. Yes. There, okay. You'll hear them called living wills, advanced directives, advanced medical directives, medical powers of attorney, healthcare powers of attorney. There's a lot of different names.
A lot of different names, but they all perform the same function.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break here. You're listening to Of Consuming Interest. Do not go away, because we're going to help you plan your future. Welcome back. You're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Evan Farr. He's a certified elder law and estate planning attorney, and we're talking about the things that you need to do to protect your family, yourself, and your estate. This is a wonderful subject, Evan. Thank you for your time and talking about it. Then beyond the medical, taking care of the medical needs for you when you're no longer able to do it yourself, what about the financial aspects of paying the bills, paying the nursing home, or whatever kind of care you have? How do you go about setting that up so someone else can do it and have access to your assets?
Well, in addition to the general power of attorney we talked about earlier, the other document that most people need to have is a living trust. That there are two different types of living trusts that we use in the field of estate planning and long-term care planning. One is a revocable living trust, which is primarily used just to avoid probate, which is a very important process. It avoids probate both at death and while you're living. If you become incapacitated, a revocable living trust can avoid what we call a living probate or a conservatorship. There's also an irrevocable living trust that we often use in connection with long-term care planning. You know, as an elder law attorney, I'm dealing with a lot of people that are facing the worries of having to pay a lot of money for long-term care, particularly nursing home care. Many people don't have long-term care insurance or can't afford long-term care insurance or can't qualify for it. And therefore, a lot of these people will use an irrevocable living trust, which is a way to protect your assets in a legal and ethical manner to take advantage of future public benefits such as Medicaid if you wind up in a nursing home or needing long-term care at home.
I'm not sure I quite understand what you're saying. Medicaid is for when your assets have been depleted. Does a irrevocable trust remove your assets from being used to provide care for you?
A properly structured irrevocable trust absolutely can do that. The general rule
because you're actually giving your money to somebody else.
Well, you're giving your money to a trust, an entity that is separate from you. Because it is irrevocable, once you put your assets in, you can't take them out, and therefore neither can your creditors or the nursing home. These are, you know, irrevocable trusts are used by the wealthy for avoiding estate tax. They're used by professionals who are worried about protecting their assets from business debts and lawsuits and judgments. And they're also used by many folks who are worried primarily about losing their assets to long-term care expenses.
And so that means then if, let's suppose, you have $1 million and you put all of that in an irrevocable trust, it's not there for you to choose to spend on your nursing home.
Well,
or for the nursing home to come after you to pay the bill.
Well,
I'm not sure I like that. It's probably a good planning document, but it seems to me like if you've got money, you ought to pay your bills anyway.
Well, and the way these trusts are typically structured is the income from the trust will be used to pay part of the nursing home bill, because the income comes out and goes to
you. So the income comes out of it. So if you have something that's earning a lot of money, then you could use that to offset your – okay.
Right.
Just won't touch the principal then.
The principal is what's being preserved in this trust. And there is a five-year waiting period. You have to typically be pretty healthy when you set these up, because if you ever do apply for Medicaid, which pays for about 70% of people in nursing homes, then there is a five-year look back where they look at any transfers you made into a trust in the past 5 years. So if you wind up needing long-term care within that five-year period, you are going to have to take money out of the trust possibly to pay for that care until the end of the five-year look back period. But at the end of that,
I see. So there is even protection. Oh, all right. I understand what you're saying. Yes. Okay. Well, that makes sense, because if it's less than 5 years, the government would be entitled to be paid. But at the end of 5 years, then the trust becomes effective and your assets are not depleted any longer.
That's correct. And okay. and what's important to understand is the reason that we protect assets is not to preserve an inheritance for children. It's really to make life of the elder better. You know, our clients, as an elder law attorney, our clients are always the elder. And the goal is if they can, you know, legally protect their assets using a trust or some other means, and then if and when the time comes, take advantage of a benefit that the federal government provides to, you know, everyone who's paid taxes all their life. You know, Medicaid can be used to pay for the basic cost of the nursing home or long-term care at home. And the money that's been protected in this trust can be used to enhance their quality of life. You know, for instance, by paying for a private caregiver to help the elder in the nursing home. So instead of getting the average 1.5 hours of care per day that people get in a nursing home, you can have a private caregiver that where
you
pay. So
you could pay for that out of the interest that comes out of the trust, but you can't use the amount of money in the trust itself.
Well, you can't directly use the principal in the trust, but these trusts always have a back door, so to speak, where the children can take the money out and use that money for your benefit.
And if your kids like you.
Exactly.
Right.
So you have to have good kids that are wanting to do this for their parents.
So there is a way to use – even the term irrevocable trust does have some ways of getting the money out to use when it's needed.
That's correct.
Okay. So but can the child make the decision as to what to come out and when, and does there have to be a proven need or –
It depends how the trust is
and
worded.
How it's structured. Yeah.
Sometimes the children are allowed to take it out on their own. Sometimes, you know, if there's multiple children, they may all have to agree. They may have to go to a third party called a trust protector.
Depends on how you structure it.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to have to take a break here. I can't believe it. Time's flying by. Gosh, I'm learning so much from you, Evan. Thank you so much. You're listening to Of Consuming Interest, and do not go away. We've got more to talk about. Welcome back. You're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Evan Farr. He's a certified elder law and estate planning attorney, and we're discussing some of the things that are really critical for us to understand and utilize that are available to us through the law to protect our assets, to protect ourselves, to deal with health issues, inability to handle our own affairs, and so on. Before we took the break, Evan, we were talking about the irrevocable trust, which does have, as you says, a back door where money can be used for various things. Is it possible that people, if they have enough money, that they might want to put some funds in an irrevocable trust and others just in whatever kind of trust that they chose to do, a revocable?
Absolutely.
It's an idea is to use a difference.
Yes. The most people do not protect all of their assets in an irrevocable trust.
Mm-hmm.
Irrevocable.
That's hard to say. I'm saying irrevocable.
Either one is correct.
Oh, good. I'm glad I didn't make a mistake.
Also, most people will keep, typically about $100,000 out of the trust, maybe more depending on their situation.
Mm-hmm.
They may only want to protect their house, so maybe they only put their house into the irrevocable trust. Yes.
And this could be too if someone, for example, has a family business. Could this be a consideration in where that business is the primary source of income for the family?
That's correct. Yeah.
So there are lots of things to look at in terms of the way you're structuring. This is why we need somebody to guide us on all of these issues. It's so complex.
Right.
My goodness, it really is. Okay, now, let's just talk about the business of paying the bills if you can't pay your own bills. Are the documents that we've talked about to date, would they enable somebody to take over and do that for us?
Yes, absolutely. The most important document, again, being the general power of attorney that we talked about back at the beginning of the show, that is typically the document that lets somebody take over and pay your bills when you're unable to. The trust also, whether it's a revocable living trust or an irrevocable living trust, has built-in provisions that allow a successor trustee to take mm-hmm. over and pay your bills using the assets of the trust if mm-hmm. you become unable to act.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, do you often recommend to your clients that they have long-term care insurance?
I do. I think long-term care insurance is a very valuable and useful product for people who can afford it, who are still healthy. Unfortunately, you have to be healthy in order to get it. Certain illnesses render you unable to obtain long-term care insurance. And, some people can't afford it. It only makes sense if you can afford it out of your income. And we don't want...
Well, what would it cost? I know it depends, I'm sure, on the age at which you purchase it. But is there a general range of what someone might pay for this type of insurance?
It really does depend on the age. If a married couple in their, or well, it's easier to focus on an individual. For an individual, say in their mid-40s, the premium might be as low as $1,200 or $1,500 a year. For somebody in their...
Does that go up as they age, or would that be...
Typically not.
So if you purchase it when you're younger, it's to your advantage.
Yes. The younger you buy long-term care insurance, of course, the more likely you are to be able to qualify, and the lower the premium is going to be. And typically that premium is locked in then for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. Now, there have been historically companies that have raised their rates across the board. They have to actually go to the state and request a rate increase.
But you're also betting, if you're in your 40s, you're betting that company is going to be around when hopefully you don't need the services until, say, your mid-70s or later. That's a big bet.
But you might not be
better off to put that money into an account and let it grow? Of course, that requires discipline.
Well, it does. And that is, in fact, what many people choose to do as an alternative.
Right. You're self-insuring, in other words.
And a lot of times they will do that through the irrevocable trust that we talked about mm-hmm. earlier, because mm-hmm. the money is there, and you're at least you're not going to lose
it. Now, what about an older person? Let's say somebody who's 65 or 70, if they wanted to purchase it, what would it cost them a year?
Well, that's the problem. At that
age, it's very expensive.
It can be $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a year
wow.
for a married couple. You know, even for an individual, it can be upwards of $5,000 a year. And for seniors who are on fixed income,
it's very prohibitive.
It becomes very,
very prohibitive. Yeah, it sure is. Well, that is an issue, something that people should consider. Now, what about a guardianship? If you have someone who's mentally incapacitated, do you have to have a guardianship? Do you have to go to the courts to get that? Or what is it?
Well, a guardianship is something that has to be done through the courts. It's a court proceeding where you go to court to petition to have the person declared incompetent. Their legal rights are then stripped away. Their right to act for themselves, the right to make legal and medical decisions for themselves. Sometimes their right to vote and their right to drive are taken away, depending on the situation. In this process, a guardian is appointed to do that work for the person.
Okay, now, is that something that you have to do before you can do some of the other stuff if a person becomes incapacitated?
Well, guardian,
we've only got a very short time to answer that.
A guardianship is something to be avoided. And the
if
power
possible.
Of attorney we talked about earlier avoids the need for the guardianship.
I got you. So there's a way to get around having to do that, because that is a very drastic thing to do.
Absolutely.
Very drastic. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. You have a website that people can visit.
I do. They can go to farlawfirm.com.
Farlawfirm.com. Well, Evan, thank you so much. It's been a delightful and very enlightening interview. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest. My guest has been Evan Farr, a certified elder law and estate planning attorney. I'm Shirley Rooker with WTOP's Call for Action.